accession number 4993, reel 2.
Flight Lieutenant Reed, reel 2. So, how long were you at Wetzlar or Dulag Luft?
Dulag Luft, I was there probably about 7 days, I think, I was there. I know I went into the prison camp about the 12th or 13th of August. And I was shot down on the 31st of July.
During these interrogations, were any undue methods used?
No, they didn't at all. There was no force or pressure, you know, just ask me questions.
Where did you go to after Dulag Luft?
It took me to Sagan, and I was then, I was registered in Sagan in the main camp, and then because there was a tremendous number of prisoners being taken at that time, they had this overflow at Beleria, which was 4 kilometres away, attached to Stalag Luft 3, which was Sagan. And it was Beleria, Stalag Luft 4, I think they called it, 4A, just about 4 miles away, three or four kilometres, I mean. And that was, I don't know, I mean, probably 1,000 in that, I think.
Can you describe what Beleria looked like?
Beleria? Well, just the four-lager, the same as the others, just four-lager with the compound gates into each compound. And it was one big compound for us with these wooden huts which had about 8 rooms in them which held 12 prisoners, you know, rooms of like football pavilions, really. It was old-fashioned wooden, standing up in stilts. And there was a sports ground. There was a field you could use for playing football or hockey or baseball or whatever you wanted beside it. I don't remember much else. Oh, and showers. There were showers at the foot. Blutions and that at the foot of the place, and toilets and that right down the foot, which we used.
What was the morale of the POWs like?
I think
like
they were
that?
Quite good then, although at that particular time they were a bit upset because I had just arrived when they'd heard that the prisoners that had escaped from Dulag Luft, from Sagan, had been shot. Remember, they killed 53 or 54. And I had they'd just learned that a week or so before I had arrived there that they'd announced that the ones that had been recaptured had been shot. So, in fact, when MacDonald, Group Captain MacDonald, was in charge of our camp then, and he forbade any escaping until they found out the details of this. And in fact, I had the nerve to say to them, because they maintained that they were shot because they got into areas which were restricted areas. This was the reason they gave for shooting them. So MacDonald said that they should provide us with a map showing us the restricted areas so we could avoid them, you know, if we were escaping. So he was in the process of asking for this when I was shot down. But at that time, again, if you may remember, well, you don't remember, but those that remember, it looked as if the war might finish by the end of the year, by Christmas. In fact, that was the attitude I took when I was shot down. I felt there'd be 3 or 4 months before I got home and leave, and I'll just accept this till I get back again. Then they had a bit of a reverse, as they did at the front with the Germans push before Christmas, and it was put back a bit to the next year. But really at that time, they were quite happy to see somebody who was really new from, although it was unfortunate for you, they were happy to see new bonds who had come straight from England, because you could see exactly what was happening up till then, rather than read to what's happening in the German Beobachters and all that. But and I met one or two that I knew, you know, one or two from a squadron who'd been shot down previously, I met that had been saved. A chap called Lepine, who was a great friend of my navigators, in fact, he was another French Canadian chap, Lepine.
What effect did the setback in the Ardennes have on the POWs? Did they take it badly?
Yeah, in some ways, but I suppose they thought, well, they'll overcome that again. But it looked as if we might, you know, instead of getting him back home by about Christmas or the early New Year, it was obviously set back again then. And the other thing was that all the time I was a prisoner, I never ever had my rations, as the rations go, because rations really meant one food parcel per week and German rations on top of this. And I think the best I ever had was about 1-4 or 1-6, you know, 6 men to a parcel or 4 men to a parcel. So the rations were tight. And the German rations were even tight. The bread and potatoes and bits of barley that they gave you were pretty tight. So we weren't, you know, living in the lap of luxury. But
did the fact that you had a VC become known to the Germans?
Yeah, well, this had been known quite early on. When I was, even when I was in Brussels, I remember this fat-looking chap, the officer that was in charge, with his girl listening to write anything down that was reported. And he turned to her after I kept repeating my name, rank and number, and saying something about, you know, and pointing to my medal and saying the same as the Iron Cross, Mitt Oakley's, Mitt Diamonds and something like this, you know, he was saying to her, and so younger, you know, because I looked younger than I was then. 23 would have been. So that was the only reference I ever made to it. Never ever after that. But not even at Duelagluf did the chap say in the movie.
So it didn't, you don't think it affected the way you were treated?
Well, I don't know that well, I was never maltreated. So whether I was better treated because I had it, I'm not sure, you know, because I didn't know of any other way of being treated.
Whilst you were, you said that whilst you were at Bellaria, that this ban on escaping had been placed.
Well, MacDonald said, escaping's out for the moment till we find out what the ruling is on this, you know, if everybody's to be shot in sight, well, I think they would rethink it. And really, by the time this Ardennes thing came, and the fact that the Russians were fairly well advancing on us and the Poland, because we're in Poland, you see, that's in Poland, and I think the thoughts of escape, we still listen to our news and everything like this, but I was never ever involved in any escape plots of any sort, because it was getting too near the end of the war, I suppose.
Was there any means of getting more reliable news by the POW?
Oh yeah, we had wirelesses, yes. There was, they had their own wirelesses hidden away in tables and things. And it was just as you see in the pictures, in fact, that the canary sings, you know, that was the fact. They had the latest news from the BBC, and they would come round and circulate this news at night before the doors were shut up. Or there would, somebody would be told in the hut, and he would circulate it through all the different rooms and give you up-to-date news on what was happening. So they were listening to the wirelesses, all right.
Was there much corruption of the guards by bribing them?
Very much. There was a lot. Giving them cigarettes and getting things instead of, you know, that they shouldn't get.
Did you do this yourself?
I never have, no, I've never been involved. But I noticed we had a Polish chap in our room. He seemed to be good at it, getting onions and eggs and things for himself. But I know that they did this to get things for batteries and torches and whatnot. I knew this within some of the more, the wars that had been doing for longer. The other thing on the escape side, it was a fairly new camp, in a sense. You know, they'd only moved into it maybe, what, 4 or 5 months before I was shot down. So it was new in the sense that everybody was new in it. So it wasn't like the Sagan camp where they had old retainers that had been digging tunnels for hundreds of years and on, you know, and things started. This was all brand new and everybody was new in it. And in fact, after I was in the prison camp, what they usually did in the camp was, they had a room for 12 and they had 2 bunks, a double bunk, 6 double bunks. And when a new lot came in like we did, if they brought in another 20 prisoners, they would put 12 of you, 6 of you into a room with 6 old prisoners. So they would break the room up, a 12 room, and put 6 in another room. So that the 6 new prisoners were mixing with 6 old prisoners who then showed them the ropes about how to spin out the rations and what to cook and how to cook and whatnot. So everybody was trained. You weren't thrown into the thing with the deep end and said, there's your rations when you get with it. Well, by that time in the war, there was an awful lot of Americans being shot down, so there were new prisoners coming in quite a lot. And I think we did an assessment once in the camp, and we showed that about 2 out of the 7 in the Lancaster escaped, in other words, didn't get killed, and about 7 out of the 10 in the fortress escaped, in other words, landed and became prisoners. So there was quite a number of them coming in. In fact, we had six in our room. In my short 10 months, we even split a room up. And we had six Americans come in. And we then became peers, you know, to try and show them what it was. And in fact, when we moved out of the camp in, I think it was February, end of January, February, 45, because the Russians were advancing us and they'd started to move all the prisoners forward, further west. And we'd then to team up in twos because you couldn't split the bits of tin. You always had some sort of store of food, although they were short. You always kept some in case of extreme necessity. And in the store that we had in our hut was then split up, and you couldn't cut tins, as I say. So the six people in pairs got a tin each, and then that was between you two and things like that. So this chap, Snow and I, he was an American, we teamed up to start off with in this march and shared the tins. But then they took the Americans away after about 2 days of the march, I think. They were moved away down south towards, they've gone towards Munich, I think, and they moved, they carried RAF straight on to Luckenwald, this place near Berlin, about 30 kilometres from Berlin. It was a big army camp that held 30,000. A working camp, you know, they used to have units. And then we came up against political prisoners. There were some Polish compound there, Norwegian compounds, little compounds of political prisoners, or not necessarily army prisoners. And then the RAF, there were about 800 of us, aircrew, still in this camp in one unit. And then there was a big, great big compound beside it, suddenly with lots of American GIs that they picked up and they brought into it. And we were there for what? It took us about a week to get there, but the last 2 days they took us by train. They took us to this, I've forgotten which town it was, and gave us a sort of hot meal for a change, and put us in a train and took us to Luckenwald. And we were there for nearly 4 weeks, was it, before the Russian? No, it was less, but more than that. February, March, April, nearly 2.5 months were there, that's right, before the Russians advanced again on it and eventually took it over.
Did there seem to be much difference between the camp at Luckenwald as compared with Stalag Luft 4?
It was less organised in a sense, in that, you know, you were then the tremendous size of a camp and parcels were virtually non-existent, which they were, of course, at the end at Sagan or Valeria. We did get an odd bit of I think it was a Swedish parcel once. But you were almost purely dependent on German rations then, you know, potato and bread for the little bit we got, this soup they gave us. But there was a central kitchen area which was run by the partly British and partly German. And I remember going in there for hot water, which I used to do in the mornings, and look for the rubbish pile, where they had potato peelings and small potatoes. And I would fill this drink vessel, a big coffee pot, up with thick potato peelings or wheat potatoes that were in the pile. And in fact, once I found about six packets of soup, dried soup packets, I mean little cubes, still to be made, which I hid in my pocket. And then I would fill my drink faster up with this hot water and go past the guard with steaming hot water and maybe drop a cigarette in his pocket for letting me into it. And then I would scrub these potato peelings up and boil them and then mix them with my soup, and I had a bigger lot of food to eat. So this, you know, kept you going too.
Was there much difference between Luckenwald and Valeria as far as the attitude of the army and the RAF to imprisonment?
Yeah, well, I think we felt... I don't really know. I was such a short time down, you see, really. I suppose we were then feeling that they were nearing their end themselves. You could see this, you know, they were getting... fighting was getting nearer. You could hear fighting getting nearer. And we just wondered what was going to happen to us. It was a bit tricky in a sense that There was one went round that we were going to be kept as hostages, you know, the RAF particularly, and taken into Berlin as hostages and then make them stop bombing or shooting or something. And they did, in fact, take us to the station. And, of course, the GC, he kept delaying everything. And of course, what you usually did at these, in these occasions was if you had a beard when you went into the camp, they had your picture with a beard, and they compared it. And if you were going out, you would shave the beard off, and then they had to go and change the picture. So that would delay it again, so they had more pictures to take. So any delaying tactics that you had, you would do. And, of course, you were searched as much leaving a camp as you were entering it. You know, they searched you to make sure you weren't taking anything out as well as taking anything in. So they just took long, long, half a day to go through two huts of personnel. But eventually the word got round that we may be going for hostages, and they took us down to the station at Luckenwalde, and we were actually on the siding, and trains passing with troops and everything else in it. And we hung about there for that all afternoon. Then they put us in the train for the night, in the actual cabins, these big, you know, 40 men or 8 horses. And next morning they took us out and marched us back to the camp. So something had gone wrong. But they definitely said that they were expecting to take us on for hostages.
Did there seem any hostility on the part of the German civilians round about to RAF people because of the bombing?
I was never really in a town. I could see the point in that if you'd been shot down on a town and come down in a parachute and somebody had just lost their house. But I was away in the countryside and there was bombing roads and this tunnel. I went through Dusseldorf, funny enough, when I was being taken to prison camp in a station, into the station. I was in a train for that, right? I was in a train for a bit for some reason. Because we went into Dusseldorf station, funnily enough. But we were with guards, just two of us, you see, nobody bothered.
But when you were in Luckenwalde, that was...
No, Luckenwalde was a big camp, so there was nobody near you. But oh, the actual village, no, when we were in the village, in fact, we had young folk coming down to look at us, because they were so short themselves. And we did have bits of chocolate and things about us, and soap and that they didn't have, which we'd stored up from the prison, from the camp itself. And we would hold up these, you know, chocolate, one bar of chocolate, or not a bar, a square of this D bar, great big thick bar, or a bit of soap, and say, you know, chocolate of Zwiebel, I wanted some onions, because I fancied an onion for some reason, and you didn't get them. And oh, here's Zwiebel, Zwiebel. So you'd throw these onions across and through. And then I would throw him a square of chocolate back to him, you see. And so we did. There was a bit of dealing going on even actually at that time when we were supposed to be taken away with them.
This was with children, was it?
Children, yes, small kids. And then when we were on the march, I remember going into this, when we'd stopped at that place for a hot meal, they said they'll get hot water up in the kitchens. So I said to this chap, he'll grab the end of that big bucket, you know, to carry the water down for everybody and get hot water to make your... coffee or tea or whatever. So he said, I'm not going up for water. I said, get the water, we'll get into the kitchen. So we grabbed this thing, we get into the kitchen. As we were filling this big hot bathtub thing, the girls in the back, Cypher, poor Brot, you know, poor Brot. So we went to Brot and showed them a cake of soap. So they gave us two big loaves, and we gave them this bar of soap in the kitchen. Then we just took the water down, and that was it. So that we managed to get in. There was still barter with you, if you can get a chance to talk to them. And in some ways, they were very short themselves, you know. And that's why I suppose we couldn't expect to get much food ourselves from them.
Can you describe to me how your liberation came about?
Yeah, it was a bit... It got tricky in a sense, because the Russians advanced in the camp, which were appreciated, and our own camp, well, you've always got a sort of nucleus of running the camp inside the Germans running it, you know, on the British side, I mean. So it was a wing commander there, I forget his name, because I think they whipped away this MacDonald because of his delaying tactics and moved him somewhere else. And they had organised it so we would take over the waterworks and the electricity and whatnot if the Germans abandoned the camp, because they looked as if they were about to sort of clear off. And so that the camp was run again, because we had Bulgarians and everything and Serbians and all these different units
and all, in this area, and we didn't know what was going to happen. When eventually, they all just about all cleared out except one or two old guards. And I think it was a Saturday. And on the Sunday morning, the Russian tanks come up and along and drove along this main street that divided this camp. And they were all for knocking down the fences, but you had to watch in case they caught you up as barbed wire and whatnot. And then they were waving as if, come on, jump on the back of the tanks and let's go on and fight. And we were saying, well, we're right behind you, Joe, you know, you carry on. We'll just look for something to eat. So they drove on through, and then they left us a nucleus behind to sort of, because there was still fighting going on in the woods round about us for maybe 3 days after this, you know, shelling going on and aircraft firing and bombing on. And there was some part of some divisions hidden in the woods that had been sent left back to fight a rearguard action.
How many Russian tanks did there seem to be?
Well, I only saw about three, you know, coming up past our way. I suppose there was nothing there for them to shoot at. They went round and they just come up probably to tear the fences down so it could get out easier. But after that, it was still a bit disorganised because there was no food available anyway. And there was probably less food then than there was even under the Germans because they weren't organising anything and we hadn't the wherewithal to go and organise it. In fact, within that first week, I think, it being about April, May, that would be, I think, and they had planted out their crops. There was a lot of folk taking potatoes they'd planted for seed, you know, in the fields and eating them. And that was one of the years when they must have had a tremendous shortage later on because that was all you could get, you know, there was nothing else about. And then there was a few horses that were killed, and they were as tough as old Nick because there was hardly any beef in them. And I remember buying a bit of this horse for 10 cigarettes. And I boiled this bloody thing for about 3 hours, and it still felt like caoutchouc rubber. You know, it was no taste at all. Smelt nice cooking, but you couldn't eat it. An old horse.
So during this time from between after the desertion of the guards, you were left entirely to yourselves, really?
Yeah. And some of the guards come back. In fact, we had a threat once because some of the guards were put in the clink in the prison. And we had a threat from some of these people who were still fighting out. If we don't release them, we'll shell the camp. So they released them, you know. They were just old guards looking for protection more than anything themselves.
These were armed German soldiers?
Yeah, well, they'd given up. Oh, these were armed. These were sort of maybe an SS troop or some of this, or a Panzer Division part of it, you know. They were going to shell us because they knew, they'd seen their spy glasses, there were some Germans in the prison. But they were looking for protection. What was I going to say? Well, the Russians then started to make the fact, to us, they looked as if we were going to make trouble because, if you remember again, Churchill then began to be quite open about his feelings about Russia and Stalin. And while we were still in their hands in prison camp, he was saying Joseph Stalin's signature isn't worth the paper it's written on and things like this. Well, we were still there. We could see ourselves ending up in the salt mines, you see, with the change of face, and they knew that they should have been advancing further to keep them from taking too much of Germany. There's no use saying this while we were still in their hands, and they looked as if they wouldn't take us back very readily. They wanted to make a song of this. In fact, at one time they had a roll call of all of us, and we just made a joke of this, you know, you called yourself Joseph Soap and Winston C. Churchill or something this, and went back again and gave another name. And they were saying it to a German girl who said it in German to this Russian, and the Russian then wrote it down the way she thought it should be in Russia. You know, we gave all the football teams names of the various countries and whatnot, because some of our fellows had escaped, had moved out and made their way, you know, out of the camp and headed home. And there was about 200 shot, so they said, unless we get 800 people or whatever it was, we're going to hold you up, you know, till we get them back. They wanted to make a big splash, I felt, about going, take us all back, releasing us. They did, in fact, come in within about a week and take away the wounded and the sick and American ambulance, because the Americans were only half a day away from us, you see. But we must have been there for a month under the Russians. I think it was 3 weeks to 4 weeks. Just holding on to us there. We didn't know what was going on. And then eventually they took us to the river.
Did they arrange for transport to the river?
Yeah, they took us to the transport to the river, and we offloaded there, and the Americans took us from there to, I think it was Leipzig, and we were there for about 4 days, 3 days, just waiting for transport to fly us back.
When you got back, did you undergo a debriefing process?
Yeah, when we got back, when I flew back, well, all they did really was try and give you, you know, some food, and, well, we're de-loused was the main thing. You know, we're de-loused about 3 or 4 times before we get back to Britain, and then we got into this Lancaster at, I think this was Brussels again, and flew us back to Lynham, I think it was, where we, you know, they laid on a sort of never-ending string of ham and eggs all night. You know, for them, they felt like eating. They could eat them whenever they wanted. And they sort of debriefed you a bit, but not a lot about prison camp. Now, what they were mainly asking for was, did you know these names? You know, what's happened to these people that have never been heard of, prisoners or gone missing? If you knew of anyone to report and see what you, when you last saw them. We were only there for, I think, was it 2 days? And we got a month's leave. They had a medical exam and everything, and they got a month's leave, and they took all the particulars to. And we sent back a month's leave. And when I came back, they were then asking you, what did you want to do, you know, in your future career? And I said I was getting right to it, to study farming. So I was demobbed, not really demobbed as such, but I think they gave him a suit even then. But we had another month's leave, June, July, that's right. And I wanted to start university. And I come back to Hennesford and was demobbed. I got my demob suit. But my leave lasted till, that wasn't until November, when I was actually at university at the time. And my demob leave lasted till about the January, so I was really in the Air Force till about the January on leave.
In the debriefing, were they at all interested in asking you about any Germans who'd been in charge of you who had been mischievous in any way?
Yeah, they were, but when, and as I had never experienced this, there was nothing I could say about it, you know.
How had you got on with the guards generally? What impression of them
well,
had you got?
Well, I've never been involved with them. I mean, I just I did my things the way I should do it. I wasn't sort of causing trouble all the time. I just fitted in with what the pattern was, and you seldom came in touch with them. You know, just taking roll calls, and you did your played your football. I looked after the garden. That was my interest. Our garden for our hut, and I'd never any reason to be involved with the guards, no.
Was there any of the kind of making fun of the guards that one sometimes hears about in POW camps?
Yeah, I suppose there might have been in some of the older. Again, I think this is because this was a bit of a new camp. You know, it was all brand new, and I suppose they were all fairly new people. We had these, as I say, fresh people from, like myself, just been in the place 2 or 3 months, and the Americans been shot down. November-ish, they were only a few months in prison camp too. It wasn't long enough to do it. I suppose in the older places where they had, although we had some people that had been shot down for four years, you know, Blackie Wells and a few like that, who had been prisoners for a long time, but they were fitted in, and in fact they were the ones that seemed to organise things like their camp concerts and things like this. You know, they had a set-up like that where they had concerts going and interesting and studied German and French and things like that.
How did the new POWs like yourself fit in with the old established POWs?
I think the picture, well, because they did this business of splits, of sorting you into another room, there was always some more of you fresh. So if you felt that there was something against the old ones, you could talk among each other, say, bloody terrible, this, the way they act and the way they do this and whatnot, you know, between, because you're all new. So I don't think there was ever any friction. No, there must have been some frictions in each room. I was trying to think just now if there was ever any with us. I don't think so. You know, any fights or anything like that, I just accepted it. Well,
you didn't feel that they'd got their feet under the table?
No, there was none of that. And you shared the cooking and things like this. You know, you took 2 days under cooking or a week under cooking, and then the next chap did a week under cooking. So you couldn't complain about his food because you had a week to do it as well and try and make it. And the other thing about it, too, always remember, I say that yet in front of my, well, I used to say it in front of my children. You know, when you made a cake with these biscuit powder and whatnot, when you cut it up into 12, you made bloody sure it was 12 equal parts because you, having divided it, got the last choice. So you made sure it was 12